Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
What does mental health even mean? When I'm, because nobody talk about mental health in my country. In my traditional cultural knowledge, they just call it, you go crazy, somebody go crazy, right? It's a shameful terminology. That is the time that you are off the survival mode. Now you landed it, then other things came in. All the things that you have put it behind. Because at that time, that was not the priority for you. It does not mean you did not have those mental health issues. You had it. You park it there for a moment because you have other priorities to deal with. So when you get in this country, you're like, woof, everything is coming. I am here.
Between two worlds, we rise. Between two worlds, we try. Stories heal, stories stay. Hope finds.
Kia ora whānau, welcome to another podcast from Between Two Worlds, a series of podcasts we are doing awareness on our mental health. I have one of my great friends who's here in the studio today, so to talk about this topic. So let's get to know who we have here in the studio. Hafsat, how are you?
I am good, thank you.
It's really great to have you again back on the podcast, but now we are specifically talking in a different theme, which is mental health.
Yeah, great to be back. Right. And that topic is something close to my heart too.
Big change from where we have met before a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the studio looks really cool, and I love what you have done around here and all these beautiful things. And you're talking about mental health. It sounds like a good room to do some mindfulness stuff.
Right, yeah. So we can bring more flowers next time.
I love the decoration.
So we see how much donation we can get. Well. But Hafsat, thank you so much for making time.
Of course.
To have this corridor with us. And also whoever is listening, I'm sure they will get a lot of wisdom and learning knowledge that can help this one who is listening. So before we go into deep in the topics, let's start with this. I do this with my guest. Give you the mic. If you want to introduce yourself, how you would love to introduce yourself.
Well, I am a former refugee who was resettled here in New Zealand in 2019, so 6-7 years ago. Before that, I was displaced in the region in Asia, Southeast Asia, for about 11 years. And I was also born as a stateless person. But then now I've acquired my social work degree in New Zealand, and I am currently serving as one of the SG Secretary General of Asia Pacific Refugee Rights Network.
Wonderful. Yeah,
while based in Wellington.
Amazing. That's great. How's Wellington treating you?
Wonderful. I love Wellington, even if it's too windy.
Even if it's too windy. Amazing. Great. So, Hafsa, you mentioned stateless. Just for those who may be not aware about that term, what does it mean?
Statelessness is a terminology that used to describe the people who are not included in the national system of any country. Mm-hmm. So there are now about 15 million stateless population in across the world. Some people can have two labels, not just as one, stateless and also a refugee.
Right.
So for my case, in our country in 1982, there was amendment in the citizenship law. There was one particular clause that exclude the particular ethnic groups of the country from being the citizens of the country. Mm. So we were originally the citizens of Myanmar.
Yeah.
But then in 1982, Citizenship Amendment Law came out and we all became, you know, non-citizen. So it means we don't belong to any states in the world, not just Burma. So this kind of population is regarded and labeled as stateless population.
Wow. Wow, thank you for clarifying like this, putting it in a simple way for the people, but I think they can Google more. But with that one, which is you were talking and explaining this, I'm sure it's coming with a lot of challenges.
Yes.
Because even the term refugee itself get a lot of challenges through papers, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So within the challenge we have and the topic of today we are talking about is the healing, resilience and recovery.
Yeah.
So if I start with this question, like, what was the journey for you of being from stateless person and then coming until you resettle here in Aotearoa? How was this journey? How impacted? What kind of challenges came through this?
Well, it is a long, long story to talk about, but I will not bore the audience, but I will just mention it as in overall situation for the stateless population from my country, from other countries like Nepal, and also like Assam from India, other population from MENA region, stateless population. So anyone who is born as the stateless and live and grew up as a stateless, you are not entitled, or you don't have the privilege or the right, if you want to say, to get access to education, to get access to livelihood in the country of origin where you were born, your ancestors were born. So for my case, there was a lot of barriers, discrimination, exclusion, oppression against me, even when I was a child still. I remember my first memory of, five years old, being called by a derogatory term by my friends from other ethnic group. If I go to school, the treatment from the teachers and the friends is different, all that. And then entitlement for employment and all of that. So it's a lot of challenges even before you were compelled to leave the country to become, you become a refugee. So and then I became a refugee in Southeast Asia, in a country, well, in the countries that did not sign Convention 1951. So any countries that did not sign 1951 Convention, it means they are not responsible to give you shelter, social benefit, medical access to medication or education, nothing. So I was displaced in Thailand and in Malaysia. It means you have zero, nothing. Some refugees are forced to live in a confined prison-like camp. You are not allowed to go out to the community. But I was fortunate that in Malaysia scenario, you can go out, but you're not allowed to work. You're not allowed to study. So all refugees does, informal work where you could be exploited by the employers and all that stuff. So it was very difficult and stressful first few years of my life until I get resettled to New Zealand. And all of this journey from day one until I get to New Zealand is we call it on the survival mode. You constantly think about only how do I stay alive? How do I make it to the next day? How do I make it to the next destination, to the next point and all that? Yeah.
Wow, right. What a journey. And now, I'm one of the followers of you, Mahi.
Yes.
That I see, and I'm very amazed with how you, amazing now you are helping, advocating for many, many other peoples that to survive those challenges that have shaped your journey. So within that, Hafsa, you mentioned about this journey, how this have impacted, let's say, the resilience, the mental well-being while you were settling here.
So many impact on the mental health, but first and foremost, I just want to clarify one thing is that I had no idea what does mental health even means.
Why?
When I, because nobody talk about mental health in my country. In my tradition and cultural knowledge, they just call it, you go crazy, somebody go crazy, right? It's a shameful terminology. And people are ashamed to tell that there is someone from your family member who went crazy and mad. It is no such a soft as in a terminology that described from the perspective of well-being.
So did you have a definition for it?
No. So I didn't know what is mental health. But then I did notice, now I think about it and reflect it back again, that there was a lot of negative impact due to these mental health challenges that I had to live through as a stateless child, as a refugee younger person, and all these different countries and contexts. So at some point, I did not even know that it was a panic attack that I had when I was a refugee myself in Malaysia. Like, you suddenly, like, cannot breathe and, palm sweating, and then you're like, what is happening to me? And you're just exhausted. And then now after I came to New Zealand and I work in the NGO sector, humanitarian sector, and I started social work, and then, that was a lot of negative impacts on my mental health because of all the operations that I went through because of the system, the label, and the status, and then I had nowhere to go to deal with the stress, the depression, and loss of hope that I felt at that point in life, and it became just too much and weighing down on my mind, and then somebody just went, there was a panic attack, and I was like, wow, that was terrible, and
That's right, because I can share the same. I think in my culture as well, we don't really have specific definition for this term, mental health, because there's many other shapes. Things happen in all our I think just because sometimes we feel it's normal or is it part of the environment we grow on. But then when we start thinking a little bit more about the term, we can start imagining our lived experience. Well, if the mental health meaning this, then probably we all got through it, but we didn't feel it, we didn't know it, because we were feeling that we were born, we were strong, we have to hide it in somehow, and you know, we have just to accept it, etc. I think that's something people don't recognize, this because of the place that when you grow up, just one shape, one understanding, that definition, without understanding people's journey. And sometimes those journeys get us into something that, I don't know how to say this, but get us big resilience, that we see the different things that can happen to us here when we settle. It's nothing compared to what we faced.
Yeah.
Compared to what we've gone through. Because we were like, what you mentioned, that like you were in the surviving mode. That's a big word.
Yeah.
If someone understands that, it's the biggest kind of you're between either survive or not. So that's a huge, right? So within that, what was you think that's all those journeys and to New Zealand, what was the biggest support you think that is something you needed to make a difference in your journey while dealing with healing through this process of mental health?
I think it would have been really helpful to have straight away, you know, when you get resettled, there was a Mangere Refugee Center in, in Auckland. So people were put in that refugee center for about 6 weeks as an orientation. So there might be a romanticizing idea that when you bring refugees to another country, you put them in the paradise and everything is healed and done. You know, you're healed. But then the reality is all the trauma, all the depression and stress and, you know, these negative impacts on mental health that had been on your mind, has been with you, is with you when you are still, you got resettled to another country. And in fact, that is the very time you actually landed in a place that you feel like, okay, now I don't have to worry about my survival. Now I don't have to worry about, well, I have meal tomorrow. Now I don't have to worry about, well, somebody detain me, arrest me and forcibly deport me back. That is the time that you are off the survival mode. Now you landed it, then other things came in. All the things that you have put it behind. Because at that time, that was not the priority for you. It does not mean you did not have those mental health issues. You had it. You park it there for a moment because you have other priorities to deal with. So when you get in this country, you're like, woof, everything is coming, I am here. So I was fortunate because I could communicate in English in the refugee camp, and I talked to Rez, a refugee survivor, and I had a couple of sessions with them, but then there's not a, you know, long, sustainable thing. So that was the very first time I spoke to a counselor, and then I was trying to digest the meaning of counseling. And also there was another cultural concept is that we were not trained or told and taught to share your emotions, every little things to everybody. Absolutely not with a stranger, right?
That's right.
Even within the family context, there are things that you share with your mom, with your sister, with your dad, not with everybody. There are things that you share with your friends. So sitting with a stranger that you have never met, a counselor in front of you, and then you're like revisiting to the most unpleasant moment of your life, that you are not happy about yourself, you're not happy about the system, you're not happy about how people has treated you and all that. So there was a whole new things, and I'm like, okay, am I trusting this, a total stranger sitting in front of me, a professional counselor, and then how do I do that? So there was the learning of trusting that person and the learning of what does counseling means for me. And then it was only six sessions. I go, okay, I know what is counseling now. And I went out from the refugee camp, and then I was trying to settle in Auckland, and then I worked for Asylum Seeker Support Trust. And then I had a brilliant manager and supervisor. And at some point, I was feeling really low and down again. And she said, would you like to see a counselor? I said, oh, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then I went again, had another six session. And then I was slowly okay. Then, and I realized in the mainstreaming system in the New Zealand itself, forget about refugees alone, the mental health service is not, you know, very freely available for many people in a long time. It's very limited. It's a competing list of waiting, and then you have to see what is the most vulnerable person to be on the list. And then the NGOs that provide mental health services to the refugees and migrants. It's a very small number in New Zealand, and they have very limited resources. So it's another succession, and I don't know if I get everything that I needed, but it did help me to reflect back to myself. But then what I did get is, out of the degree that I did in the social work degree, there was one paper called The Self. It's knowing yourself. And they teach you everything starts from you. And knowing you and your world within, and then you are knowing the world outside. And I thought it was very fascinating. And then we were also trained, because as the social worker, you need to know about your emotion. If you are in the good mental space, to go and step in and help other people. Are you in the good position, in the neutral position, not carrying the weight of your mental health when you go and support another family, advocate for somebody? So it was a very good. And then I was like, okay. And also, one of the things that I did when I was still a refugee is that I did a lot of journaling, because the book is the only one items that I trust. I wrote in the journal, in the book, whatever challenges that I experience and feeling. And then I do mindfulness. It's about 5 minutes of sitting quietly and looking at where my mind is. And yeah. I do a bit of natural healing and walking. I think it's not purely on the mental health support that has helped me to heal. It is ongoing work of all this 7 years and 8 years journey in Malaysia. In New Zealand after my resettlement. Is ongoing work that I do, like taking the time for, you know, walk, mindfulness, doing things that might make me happy, even if it's very busy and chaotic. Schedule sometime getting a coffee with you and with other friends of mine. So it's ongoing healing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I am healed as in perfectly healed, but I am a lot in a better position, in a lot better place than when I was displaced in other countries.
Right. Because I wanted to ask the other question, like, what does healing look like for you today? Is it coffee?
Well, coffee is something that wakes me up in the morning, and yeah, that makes me happy sometimes in the morning. Yeah, right. The little things, appreciating the little things.
Exactly, amazing. Wonderful. Look, have some other things. This has been amazing what you've been sharing. I think it's great how there was something you mentioned that touched you about learning about yourself. Because usually our culture is about others first before we you. It's always like that, right? So until we get to that level to understand the self and you, while still we maintain our let's say values of others, right? But it's only way it's like, you know, even when you got into airline, like when you're traveling or something, they said put your seats first before you. Then slowly we start understanding that why we were neglecting ourselves. If you are not okay, how others can be okay, right? So learning that, how much it took you to say, this is something new for me, I want to learn it. The self that you described. How was that learning for you? Between that and between also caring about the family and the community, because I know you're a big advocate and things you do for community.
Yeah.
How was that balance for you?
It is challenging. And you mentioned about the advocates and the human rights defender.
Right.
So the human rights defender, advocates and activists. One of the not very healthy patterns that I see is we put everyone else first and put ourselves last.
Yeah.
Because that definition of advocacy itself is fighting for others, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, what I've seen is that burnout. In the journey of all this advocacy, it is brilliant, you know, the very brilliant advocates, activists, human rights defender, after 6 years, they just disappear because it's too much for them. Because you can only neglect so much about yourself. At some point, your body is screaming. And also, one thing that I notice is people often don't talk about it. People talk a lot about, oh, see your GP for physical health. You have a fever or nose running. Go get a Panadol or something. But people often do not emphasize the fact that the stress and the mental health negative impact can also make you sick, as in physically. These are physical and mental health are interconnected.
Yeah.
And that is also impacting you. So I was like, ooh. And then at some point I was also feeling that burnout, and I noticed myself like one of those days that I got really irritated by a very simple question. I got easily triggered by something that is very simple, like, oh, somebody being late for 5 minutes, like, everything like, and then I was like, why? Why it is happening to me? And then I, because I have been not been listening to my body. I have not been listening. My body screaming that, also look at me. Great, you are advocating for other people. Great that you are looking after other people and your family. How about you? You needing enough sleep, you needing enough rest, you also needing a little bit of time to appreciate the sun, the walk, a coffee, as you mentioned, a book, a friendship, a conversation. You never make time for those, and you're just giving, 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 and then neglecting your own well-being. It's not serving others. And I got sick, really sick, a couple of times. Like, I went to the doctor, the diagnosis, they were like, nothing is wrong with you. And I almost had an argument that something is wrong, I am tired. So that tired, physical tiredness, it's also the impact on my mental exhaustion that I never take a break. So when I was sick, like 4 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row, what happened? I cannot do what I usually do for the people, and I cannot be, you know, at the forefront advocating. I cannot fulfill my obligation and responsibility for the loved ones. And you rightfully put it in your question that if we don't look after ourselves, we will not also be able to do what we love to do and what we are supposed to do. It's also come with the concept of sustainability. So, and then mental health also make me realize is that when your mental health is not in a good place, in a good stage, your functionality, the day-to-day functionality, as in you waking up in the morning, preparing to go to work, and, you know, at the workplace, you're smiling and waving. You cannot do that. You just don't have that mental space. In a meeting, you've been in the right headspace to present what you need to present. Sorry. You're just not. So it is so important. It was a hard learning. And then also one of the symptoms, after I do a lot of digging, I reflect a lot, many years, as in ongoing. Mental health is not one day, oh, I saw counselor for 2 weeks, therefore I'm healed now. I'm a perfect human. No, it is ongoing work. You get better than yesterday. Today I'm better than yesterday. And the next day I'll get better. I'll get better. It's ongoing healing. So as I do go deeper, healing of myself, and then I noticed that I had the symptom of, it's called people-pleasing symptom. You want to please everyone around you. You want to make sure everybody around you is happy, but not yourself. So it's also a symptom that is coming from the mental health. And that is also a combination of all the oppression that you experience in your childhood. When the system oppresses, you learn to be content with whatever is given to you. You don't ask for more. When the all this thing not giving you anything, instead of asking you, why not me? Why don't I have it? Instead of that, oh, yes, this is all I have. I don't have the liberty to ask for more. But within the little things that I have, there are others around me who are also in my shoes. What can I do for them? So it's people-pleasing symptoms as a negative impact of the oppression that comes with you. And then you take it along with you all the time. And then there was a not very healthy definition of advocate and activist. You should put your community first. You should put your cause first. Yes, yes. And also you. You also matter. That is a hard, hard learning for me, Korean. I'm still learning every single day. I am so tempted to say yes to everything people demand, because the problem that we are living now in the human rights space, in the asylum seeker space, migrants' rights, refugee rights, it's never ending. The world is at a very crazy place. People will always ask from you more and more and more. Until you say, no, that's it. That's all I have got to pay, give it to you and to the service. I don't have any more left. That's so I am slowly learning to put some healthy boundaries. I am not there yet. I'm still on the work in progress.
Wow. Amazing. I mean, what you're sharing, but it's, I feel the journey, but at the same time, I really appreciate this corridor that you're sharing, and hope people watching can listen, because we know there's many people who are feeling the same. Sometimes because the problems and things doesn't stop, keep going. Then when we start saying, can I just sometimes take a break from something? But there's something, I need to comment on that. I need to answer this and that. Then sometimes I think we need to learn about this self-care you. Because maybe sometimes if we control those emotions and things, we maybe have a different time to see, we can reply later, we can do that, or can be someone else. Have a different opinion, can do it, you know, because it's always like about that. If we burn out, if we have that energy gone, then I think when the time when we really be needed to support, that well, we will feel disappointed because we can't offer. Yeah, but look, I can keep going on this organization law, but I know the time is running fast.
Yes.
But I really appreciate this conversation. I know we can do two more podcasts, but I want to jump into two themes with you quickly.
Sure.
One of them, it's about a cultural and safety space about mental health.
Mm.
So maybe a question around that is what make like a space culturally safe for those people who come from diverse backgrounds to talk about the mental health? Do you have any advice or message around that for the provider organizations?
Yeah.
What does it look like, that safe space?
Well, look, as I mentioned, even in my paid job is something else. I work for Asia Pacific. I'm still a community advocate, so I'm still supporting refugee resettlement sometime for interpreting or whatever it is. And as a code of ethic, I'm not supposed to say the name or anything, but without mentioning the identity, I'll tell you a couple of experience. When I interpreted for people coming from refugee background, we talk about mental health. Because the service provider identified, the caseworker identified that the person or the families are not able to focus what is needing for them to focus, whether be it for education, settlement, employment, because of their mental health issue. And as I have mentioned, these refugees, before they came to Aotearoa in their own communities, have no knowledge about mental health. There is nothing that called mental health, right? You just say you're stressed. So when somebody offer you, it seems like you are very stressed and you have mental health issue. Would you like to see a counselor straight away? And they were like, no. I just need my housing settled. I just need whatever relatives that has been still left behind, bring it to New Zealand. They are not going to the question of, yes, I have been stressed and dealing with mental health issue because of all this contributing factor of not having a job, not getting my family with me, but underlying is my mental health that they do not understand. Therefore, when you go and tell them, like, do you want to see a counselor so you feel a bit better, you can sleep better, you can eat better, and you can focus on your day-to-day reality, they were like, no, just bring my family. Give me just the house. Yeah. Because they just don't get it from their cultural perspective. So you need to approach from the perspective of culture. Okay, it's really good. Thank you for telling me all of this. But then there are different ways of coping mechanism that the people from the cultural background does. Some is the prayer. For some Muslim, it might be the imam. When everything is so challenging for you, you lean on to God. Some other people lean on to the spiritual belief that you believe in, they believe in. And there might be like the elderly from the communities coming, you know, the she from the community encouraging them. There are different ways of doing it. So slowly looking at through their lens, what does counseling into their language and their culture translate as in, not direct translation or counseling. It might be a conversation with their imam. It might be a conversation with their chief of the village or the community. It might be like meeting with other women from the community, women to women, having a conversation and slowly finding some coping mechanism through religion, cultural activities, something like that. And then you slowly coming in the Western knowledge of mental health support and services, as in you're doing really great through your, you know, community, cultural way of coping mechanism, religion, prayer, conversation, peer support. But this kind of method may also amplify your healing. So these are the things that we need to really look into consideration, take into consideration. And I think some of the things that I observe in the refugee resettlement sector in New Zealand is that when you talk about cultural competency, they just get somebody from the same background, a community member, hire them, tick the box. Oh, yes, we have a cultural competence, for example, Korean from his community, therefore everything is sorted. It requires beyond that. It requires changing the whole modality of how do you approach a client, how do you make sure that client feels safe and want to come to you again to talk to you, not just like you are, you know, speak in a way, language. By forcefully coming, come. Counseling is so important. You must do the counseling, and then you will be able to focus on your employment and settlement. They were like, oh, I don't want to come and talk to you again. That speak the volume, right? When somebody, the first session, after the first session is done, no, don't call me. If that is something that you call counseling, I don't want to talk about it. You're not resolving my issue. But if you did it really well and slowly easing into cultural components, you'll be like, oh, yes, I would love to come and talk to you more about it, maybe.
Right.
So that's the way how to go about it. And to do that, it requires times and investment and resources, which the sector don't have or don't want to. Because to actually transform a culturally competent mental health framework, that you have to invest your time to truly understand the diversity within this refugee and migrants community in Aotearoa. Even if we call it refugee, we are not just one group. We come from many different countries, right? Migrants come from many different countries and contexts. So, and also in social work, we have been taught to look at people-centered approach. It is based on the person that you are talking to. What is it the best thing for this client, for this person and Fano that you are talking to? And how does the safe environment mean for that person? Is it having their sister next to them while they're doing the counseling, even if it's confidential? Is it coming to a certain location? Is it meeting with a certain particular gender counselor, not just the men or women? And is it about what is that? So we really need to do the homework and creating that safe space and really invest in it.
Yeah, wonderful. I think this all explained well into this theme, which I can keep going. I guess we need to do maybe more podcasts on this, but really appreciate this wisdom, knowledge, and sharing around, because exactly, it's like that. It's kind of every people is different case, different cultures, different needs, etc.
Yeah.
So we're very well said on what you have shared, Hafsa, here. I want to jump in quickly in the last question I have, which is about, I know a lot of this awareness activities, even including one of this podcast, is great, right? Mm-hmm. But what is the actions?
Mm-hmm.
So my question will be here about, what do you think that some individuals who are facing stigma in their daily life, what kind of action or advice you can give around how they can go ahead of those stigma they are facing in their life? Stigma has mentioned here could be many of, like, a lot of people don't like to be called labeling.
Mm-hmm.
It could be racism, could be refugee itself and become a trouble for many people, which, you know, because we don't get sometimes job because of this background things.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think that we can give those people who are dealing with those stigma in their daily life?
Mm.
What is the best?
Stigma as in the mental health or stigma as in their identity in New Zealand?
In the mental health, if we specifically.
I think education is the best way forward, because in our community we're still learning. I mean, my family is still learning, I'm still learning, that mental health is not something shameful to be.
Mm.
It is something that everyone experience in their life, whether they speak or they do not speak about. It can be the things that we describe as, my mood is not good today, and I feel low under the weather. It's not physical health, it's depression, all of this. So we have to normalize speaking about mental health in the communities in a language that is acceptable for these particular communities, whichever communities we're aiming for. So we don't have that stigma of, oh, mental health is a shameful thing. It is embarrassing, as you mentioned, as a man to go and seek for help because I cannot cope with the stress that is, you know, having in my life. And people will ask, are you not a man? A man is supposed to be able to deal with everything and anything. So something like that. So just to educate the community more and more and normalizing this language around mental health. And even, you know, now we have the younger generation of refugees and migrants growing up in Aotearoa, even from their younger time in the school, in the education system, incorporating that, because our children go to school regardless, right? So in the school system itself, incorporating the awareness about mental health in the community setting, the community events that we create by different events like libraries, city council, all of that. So normalizing it, talking about it, and encouraging the community to talk about it in a way that they prefer to talk about, not the way that we frame it, like, talk about mental health this way.
Yeah.
We're just opening the space for them. Talk about it just as the way you feel comfortable to, just how much that you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And one step at a time, because as I said, all this mental health issue, the trauma cannot be healed overnight. And when people do not heal it overnight, I saw some of my colleagues who came to New Zealand at the same time as me, even before me, still crying, healing, not healing, going back, or like, oh, I don't want to see anybody, locking themselves up in the room for 2 weeks, still happening. So we really need to do this healing to really thrive in New Zealand after resettlement, after migration to this country. Because if we don't incorporate this, changing the narrative of the mental health, normalizing the mental health in our dialogue, in our community, activities that we do in the resettlement framework, migration settlement framework, we are setting it to fail. We are not setting it to thrive. So we really need to think about it really strategically.
Mm.
And then intentionally, we also have to implement it as an action, as you just mentioned. The action does not has to be like, oh, a perfect full package of action.
It's
implemented
journey.
As in like, oh, 2026, 2027, we're done. We just have to break it down as a strategy. Yeah. Okay, what is the first step that we're doing? Is it about narrative change? Good. Is it about normalizing? Mm. Good. What is the second step? The strategy change in the settlement, in the migration integration journey, whatever it is. So you go to all this step up implementation and operationalization of it together with the people.
Beautiful. Very well said. I love that. It's just amazing how we just frame it all beautifully. So we're coming to the end of our podcast time. There's last message or last question in a minute. What will be your message to everyone who is listening or watching this podcast?
Yeah, I think, yes, mental health is challenging for everybody, regardless of your label, your status. But I just want to say that be kind and gentle additionally to the refugees and migrants. Because on top of everything that every human being go through in life as a challenge, the refugees and migrants have additional trauma, oppression, and exclusion that they have experienced before arriving to Aotearoa. After arriving to Aotearoa, integrating in this country itself is adding another level of challenges for them. So please do not frame them under the label of refugees or migrants as in they are some sort of aliens. Be more kind to them, be more gentle to them, invite them as a part of your community, as a part of New Zealanders and Kiwis, and we'll do this together.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Hafsa.
Okay.
I really appreciate your time and everything you do. And I appreciate this korero. I think it was just amazing. I can keep going with you hours and hours. And this has been over the normal time of the podcast we do, but I just wanted to listen more.
Because
you're just amazing.
thank you again. Appreciate
so
it.
Last one, I have this tradition.
Yeah.
This is we do at our guest. They leave a question, so you will have also a chance to leave a question, whoever has been the guest. So let's see what question have been left. And if you watch our YouTube, you will know. We will not tell you who's the guest.
Okay.
So I have a question here. Okay, so the question says, where is your favorite place in New Zealand and why?
It's in the nature, in the bush. Any places where I can quietly connect to the land and the nature. And the water, I love everything about it. It's just so beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, it is also a part of my healing, as I mentioned. When I'm in the nature, when I'm in the bush, hiking, around the beach, listening to the water, it's just my part of my healing.
Amazing. Beautiful. And what amazing nature we have in Aotearoa, right?
Yes, we do.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again, Hafsa.
I appreciate
your time and things you do.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. Also, final, hope you guys enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed and learned a lot. So leave us a comment, you see what you think, and see you next podcast. Ka kite.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.